as you remember, Avraham Avinu was taken out, he was thrown by his name, the king, Nimrod. He was thrown into the burning furnace, came out alive. Even Nimrod also acknowledged that Hashem exists, and Hashem who helped Avram to survive. Otherwise, for a burning furnace, how can a person come out alive? The same thing also with Nebuchadnezzar. When he cast the Nil into the lion's den, the lions who were hungry for a few days did not eat, and the Nil was thrown into this den. And nevertheless, the lions didn't touch him, didn't devour him, came out alive. So even Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian emperor, also acknowledged this is the hand of God who caused all this, and acknowledged this is a God. Otherwise, how could such a thing be? Let me tell you as emphatically as a possible thing that if a person came out alive from Auschwitz or from any other of these extermination camps alive, it's only by a divine miracle, not less than the miracle which David did for Avraham Avinu or which Hashem did for Daniel. And as we say, one picture is worth a thousand words. Let me draw you here several pictures. And on each event which I myself went through, a person can say possibly was just a coincidence. It just happened. It just happened. But therefore I'm going to mention a number of stories, things which I went through myself as a child. The cumulative effect, one coincidence, another coincidence, it just happened. Too much to say this is just a coincidence. And just like I'm going to tell you experiences of my own personal survival, you can ask any person, and are still around, Baruch Hashem, hundreds of thousands of people who were in Auschwitz, who were in Mauthausen, in Majdanek, in all these different extermination camps, and ask them, they should tell you their own life stories. How did they survive? And you'll be able to pinpoint, oh, this is a coincidence, another coincidence, another coincidence. How many coincidences until this person survived? It's only Hashem's hand. And Chassidus discusses there are two ways how the Eibishter conducts himself in this physical world. One we call Alpi Derech HaTeva, and one we call, which is Lamalam Derech HaTeva. You see, interesting enough, unique to our religion, to the Torah, the Jewish people have two calendars, or two new years. Sometimes we count, as it says, mentioned the Torah, remember, which is the beginning of the year, is Nisan. Nisan is called the Rosh HaChodeshim, the first of all the months, then we call Nisan the first, and the year the second, and so on. Then we find another Jewish calendar, as valid as the first one, which is the first month, which would be called, considered the new year, Tishrei. As you know, Rosh Hashanah is called the beginning of the year. So how many beginnings do we have? Is it Nisan is the beginning of the year, or is Tishrei? Is Nisan the first month of the Jewish calendar, or is it Tishrei is the beginning? And yet we celebrate both. So the answer is because there are two ways how Hashem conducts himself with the world. In the natural phenomenon, the natural ways, not miraculously, the natural person works, has a business, makes parnosa, makes a livelihood. This is a natural way. For this natural course of events, the natural way how Hashem conducts himself in this world, the beginning is Tishrei. As you know, Tov, the very name Tishrei, stands Tov is the last letter. Shin is the second last letter. Resh is the before. So we go from the bottom up. For the world of nature, going up, the last letter of Tishrei is Yud, Tov, Shin, Resh. And the last three letters going from the below up, like the ladder, which Hashem showed to Yankiv. And then we come to Yud, to Hashem. Now there's a person's task to work naturally and reaches Hashem. But then we have another way how the Eibishter conducts himself in this world, miraculously. Higher than laws of nature. This is Nisan. The very name Nisan is what? Nisi, miracles. And when did the Yidden come out from Egypt? The month of Nisan. And for this reason, how is in the Torah, in the Bible, you don't find the name Nisan, it's rather Chodesh Aviv. The Yidden went out from Mitzrayim, the month of Aviv. Just like we say, Tishrei is the alphabet from the bottom up. The month of Aviv, which is in the month of Nisan, is from the up, from the letters down. Aviv is Aleph, based downwards. In other words, this is, although the Eden did not deserve they should be saved. Remember, the Eden were in the Memtei Sha'aretz, the 49th level of impurity, until even the Malachim, the angels, asked the Eibishter, why do you drown the Egyptians? Elav Avodah Zarah, Elav Avodah Zarah. Both are equal. The Egyptians worshipped Avodah Zarah, but the idol worship, but the Jews also worshipped Avodah Zarah. So that it wasn't of any natural cause. The Eden had the power to go out from Egypt. Egypt was the superpower in those days, the only superpower. As the Chazal tell us, not even one slave could escape. And nevertheless, suddenly, power to acquiesce, a whole nation of millions of people should leave. This was supernatural. So these are the two ways how David should conduct himself, sometimes naturally, sometimes supernaturally. With the Jews who were not in the concentration or extermination or death camps, Hashem conducted himself like Tishrei, in natural ways. The Jews of England, the Jews of Australia, the Jews of the United States. With the Jews in Auschwitz, in the concentration camps, Hashem had revealed himself even more so, because this is the supernatural way of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not one person without a miracle. As I said, just like you'll hear from me stories, ask any survivor, he should tell himself his own biography, his own stories, how did he survive, how did he come out alive. You'll see that it was a natural phenomenon. It wasn't less of a ness, less of a miracle, than someone came out actually literally from a burning furnace, which and the furnace was shut close. And nevertheless, a miracle happened and he came out alive. Or a person comes out from the lines there. So let me just say some stories about myself. And Yim Hashem, next week, of course, you say, if Hashem connected himself, the Malam Eder HaTeva, hide the loss of nature, supernaturally, the Germans could not completely exterminate even the survivors, why wasn't Hashem also with those who did perish? This is the $64,000 question. If Hashem helped every who came out from Auschwitz, why didn't he also help simultaneously those even who did perish? It wasn't just a natural form, because Hitler had the power. If Hashem would have wanted, he would have also saved those 6 million Jews who did perish. As I said, each story which I'm going to tell you, how I was in the hands of the clutches of the Gestapo and the SS, each story individually, you can interpret, it just happened. It's just a coincidence. It just happened. But again, the cumulative effect, you yourself tell me, is this something natural, or it was just like in Mitzrayim, Hashem took out a nation from Egypt, supernatural, Malam Derech HaTeva, those who survived, but it also wasn't supernatural. I was born in Czechoslovakia. In 1938, Hitler, to induce Hungary to join with the Axis, with the Germans, to fight the Allies, it split up Czechoslovakia in 3 parts. One part, Bohemia, and Sudetendeutschland. This he annexed to Germany, a big chunk of Czechoslovakia. One part, he just split off from Czechoslovakia. He gave it to Hungary, as I said, as a dowry or an inducement that Horthy, the president of Hungary, should also join with Hitler. And this part where we lived became also part of the Czechoslovakia, which was given to Hungary. So 1938 to 1944, this part became Hungary. I cannot tell you all, because mamish, you can say, continuously, you can see just nissim, miracles upon miracles. But I'll just give a few highlights. And if time will permit, I can tell you many, many more. It was at the beginning of 1944. Suddenly, when Hungary started to waver that it should stop supporting or helping Hitler, so Hitler occupied Hungary. Over 100,000 German soldiers marched into Hungary and occupied Hungary. Before that, in 1941, all Jews who were not born in Hungary were taken to Ukraine. My grandparents, who were also born in Poland, so 1941 they were taken to Ukraine, afterwards to Russia. All my sisters, how my father tried to help, but it was just when this Hungarian general arrived to take them back, that night, just one day later, I'm sure all of you heard Babi Yar, where 150,000 Jews were killed in one day. So among these 150,000 Jews were also my grandparents. But those who were born in the city where we come from, were born there, they did not take until 1944. In other words, from the Hungarian Jews were only taken for 1944. Until 1944, only foreign-born Jews were taken. It was a Friday morning. Before that, just 1 week before, the general who occupied the city where I come from, he contacted the Jewish Community Council, the Kehila, and he says, if you give us $1 million, we'll spare you. You won't be sent to Auschwitz. Although it was a large community, 20,000 Jews in this city, but nevertheless, $1 million in 1944 was more than $10 million now, much more than $10 million now. And that's what the SS general said. I promised, if we are going to give them $1 million, the Jewish population, the city will be spared. So, of course, everybody gave away everything. Those who did not have enough money gave their silver candelabras, the leichters, the menorahs, the rings, the diamond rings, the woman which had, everybody just to save their lives. So within a few days, the community council collected over $1 million, gave to the general. And here you can see the veracity of the Germans. As soon as he had that $1 million in his pocket, this German general, 2 days later started taking the Jews to Auschwitz. It was a Friday morning. I remember it mamish like now. It was 7 o'clock in the morning. My father used to go every day, three times a day to shul. In the morning, and also Minchen Mairev, without any exception, rain or shine, cold, snow, slush, he always went to shul. But when after the Germans entered into our city, it became dangerous. So slowly he went fewer and fewer. First he went every day, then he said it was dangerous, he went only Mondays and Thursdays, but of course Shabbos. Afterwards he couldn't even go Mondays and Thursdays, so he only went Shabbos. So it was Friday morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. My mother went out to purchase everything for Shabbos. It was not like nowadays. If you want to get gefilte fish, you just go to a store. You buy yourself a bottle of gefilte fish. You want to have chont, you go to Mermelstein's or to this store and that store, and you get everything ready. In Europe, before the war, or during the war, you had to prepare, you had to go buy a live chicken, you had to take it to the shochet, you should slaughter it, you have to take off the feathers and salt it and so on. So 7 o'clock in the morning, my mother was already the marketplace, to get all the vegetables and the fish, everything was necessary for Shabbos. My father was at home, davening, having his talis and tefillin on him, and davening. My sister and I were still, my parents only had two children, my sister and I, and we were still sleeping. Suddenly we hear a furious knock. My father goes to the door, opens the door, and seven SS and Hungarian police, the Gestapo with the black shirts, and SS, and one or two policemen enter into our apartment, come to our house. And they take out a list. It is the Mangel family. Father says, yes. They had already a list how many people were there, which I didn't tell you before. In order, the Germans were very efficient, very methodical, very organized, and very efficient. So in order to be able to take all the Yidden at once from our place, from all the villages around our city, in all the suburbs, another 20,000 Yidden were brought into our city, and they were all placed with Jews. In other words, every Jewish family had to take few Jews from these villages or from the suburbs, they should stay with us, come in with all the Yidden in the city. So we also had this list, who is in this apartment. So this person, everything was checked off. Where is Mrs. Mangel? Of course, in German, it's Frauenangel. So my father said, she's at the marketplace now. So the chief, the Gestapo of this group, he points to my sister. He says, now you get up and you go fetch your mother. She gets up, she tries to get dressed, and something within me said I should also go. I was less than 10 years old. And I said to the Gestapo, see, in Czechoslovakia, every Jew spoke at least 3-4 languages. We spoke Czech, we spoke Hungarian, we spoke German, and before, of course, also Yiddish, some people also Hebrew. But 3-4 languages every Jew knew in Czechoslovakia. So I knew my mother tongue was also German. So I said to this Gestapo, I'd like to go with my sister. And she's going to find our mother, I'd like to go with her. And I jump up from bed to get dressed, and the Gestapo just pushes me back. He says, you go sleep. I jump up again, and I tell him, I want to go with my sister, and he pushes me back the second time. Then I burst out crying, and I say, I want to go with my sister. Now, logically, as I'm thinking back, in time of danger, you're surrounded by 7 a Gestapo and SS. A child, logically, naturally, with whom does he want more security? With whom does he want to go? With his father or with his sister, who's just a year and a half older than him? Logically, it should have been in time of a panic, time of fear, you want to be with somebody who's grown up, even with your father. But something inside told me, go with your sister. And I burst out crying, and I said to the Gestapo, I want to go with my sister. And you can imagine who were these Gestapos. The scum of the world, of the earth. The lowest of the lowest, the most callous, most barbarian. So when I burst out crying, my father says to this Gestapo, there are 2 children. You see, because near our beds, on the chairs, with our clothes, he says, you see, even they always play together, they do everything together, even their clothes are similar. So why don't you let them go? So this callous, cruel, vicious Gestapo, before he just cast me back, threw me back into my bed, he says, go with your sister. So I got dressed, and we go out to the marketplace. And can you imagine, for Shabbos, it was teeming with thousands upon thousands of people. And mind you, in Kashor, Košice, where I come from, this is the city in Czechoslovakia, nice back Czechoslovakia, there were over 20,000 Yidden. By that time, it was since before the suburbs, about another 20,000 Yidden. So the marketplace was mamish teeming with people. Nobody knew that we are going to be taken. We were the very first family in Kashor, this Košice. The first family was the Mangal family was taken. So nobody knew about the danger. So everybody went to prepare for Shabbos. So as I went with my sister, we went to the marketplace. Now find a needle in a haystack. We looked all over. But you know, if you find 20, maybe every woman went to buy things for Shabbos. Some even brought their grown-up children to carry them the merchandise. We looked for over half an hour. We couldn't find mother. So then we said, since we can't find, maybe she went back already. And we decided we're going to go back. As we leave the marketplace, this big, huge area, and we're about to go to the streets, which leads us home, suddenly we see mother, of course, with 2 baskets full vegetables, fruits, and fish, and everything for Shabbos, and also for the next few days. So we tell mother what happened. 7 Gestapo, 7 SS came to our house. So mother said, but did they promise they won't take the Jews if we give them $1 million? So I said, this is our German promise, and they're taking us. So my mother became very, very nervous. And she says, let's hurry home. Again, I don't pretend to be not a novi, not extraordinarily smart. I was only a child of 10 years old. I tell mother, what's the hurry? What's the hurry? You are out. Sister is out. I am out. Maybe father will also somehow get out. And we'll be able to escape from the SS. Once you are at home, with all the 7 together, we won't be able, the 7 Gestapo, we won't be able to escape. But what's the hurry? Let's spend time, do something. Maybe we find father, he may also find an opportunity to get out. My mother, as you know, a Yiddish mother said, if father is going to Auschwitz, I'll go with him. Again, a Yiddish mama. Not, if she should save herself. If father goes to Auschwitz, she wants to accompany him. And she did not listen to me. I kept on insisting, but what's the hurry? You honor to go, you go an hour later. Why go now? And she was nervous. No, she must go home. So then I said to mother, we have still hours, but now it's a big apartment house in the city. We have a goy shed. All the tenants were all Jews. The super was a goy. See, in those days, there was no such a thing as a Shabbos clock. You know, the light should go out. So always the super used to come up, and we used to give him for Friday night leftover chicken soup, a leftover little kugel, and they liked us very much. The whole family, all this, they were goyim, but they liked us very much. Their daughter was working as a clerk at a tavern, wash it for drunkards, give out the whiskey. It was a block and a half away from our house. So I tell mother, at least go, let's go to her and let her go to our house and find out what happened to his father. Maybe he also escaped. Just like you are out, sister is out, I am out. Maybe he also somehow got out. I don't know how, but maybe. So my mother wanted to accept it. Not to go, does not. But at least before we go home, find out what happened to father. So when we went to this tavern, and the tavern was full with customers. You know that goyim, shikurim, drunkards. And she was serving. My mother, can you imagine with what anxiety and what fear and nervousness she goes over to this girl, this young lady, says, please. I said she liked us very much. She says, please go home and see what happened to Mr. Mangel. She says, Mrs. Mangel, of course I would do it for you. But just see how the whole tavern is filled with customers. If I go away, they'll make a riot. You know, chic, if you don't give them the whiskey, they can make a riot. So please let me first serve them. And once I give for everybody their amount, how much they need the whiskey, then I'll just go home. I'll run home and come back. My mother kept on it, please do it faster, please do it faster. She says, I'm doing it as fast as possible. But nevertheless, it took like 10, 15 minutes. By the time when she finished serving all the shikurim, all her customers or her clients, so she puts on her coat, overcoat, and she goes home. She goes towards our house. The place, see, the tavern was here. This was a half a block. And here this street, and here half a block was our house. I got Dalit. So she had to go to the corner and come down, and here in the middle of the block was our house. Everybody can see what I mean. As my mother would have walked with her, just to make her she should run faster. And I was holding my mother, and she was just shivering from the fright. But I kept her at the door of the tavern, of the store, and she went to the corner, turning down towards our house. And as she came to the corner, before she had a chance to turn right to the street, what do you think, who appears at the corner? There's my father. As we see our father, so of course he runs, he sees, because the shiksa, this young lady, showed that we are here in the store. So he comes running towards us, we run towards him. My mother exclaims, how did you save yourself? How did you get out from 7SS, from 7 Gestapo? My father says, now is not a time to have discussion. Let's run. Where should we run? Again, as I told you before, the SS and the Gestapo, as you know, the term Yeke, very punctual, very precise, very methodical, very orderly. As the Friedrich Rebbe used to say when he went to visit, he went to Germany for his affairs. He says, in Germany, what he noticed, the minyan started 8 o'clock, the morning prayer. 1 minute before 8, the synagogue was empty. 1 minute after 8, there was no more seats. Everything was taken. See how everybody, exactly 8 o'clock, so punctual. So they were always, in everything, even this extermination, also had a whole schedule away. when they took the Jews in Czechoslovakia, the place where we come, they just didn't take haphazardly any Jews which they found. They took this neighborhood, for example, say they took Forest Hills. As long as Forest Hills wasn't Judenreich, Juden clean, Jew clean, the Jews in Borough Park or in Manhattan were safe. They just didn't pick up any Jew on the street who did mal or went to shul and grab them and take them to Auschwitz. Everything in an orderly fashion. And since we lived in the center of the city, and the center of the city, our house happened to be the first house, and since we were the owners of the house, we were the very first family of these thousands of Jewish families who were taken. So we had our cousin, or the nephews of my parents, who lived in one of the suburbs, not really suburbs, but at the outskirts of the city. So we were running there. We knew before a few days we'll have peace, because until they take out all the Jews from the inner city and to come to the suburbs, we'll have a few days, and then we'll see how we can smuggle ourselves through to the through the border to the next country, which we'll soon discuss. But so we came there, and then my father sat down, relaxed a little bit, and then he says, how did he get out? He says, he relates, when until we came back to the SS, and the Gestapo said to my father, to put all the furniture into one room. Because again, all this expensive, nice, beautiful furniture was taken to Germany. So in order, again, it should be easier for them not to take from this room, to put all the furniture into one room. As you know, the European furniture is not like the American, especially the Denmark and the Scandinavia, very massive, heavy pieces. Now, brake front was heavy wood, and not one person, not even two people could carry it. A dining room table, you know, with heavy legs, you know, it's heavy table, heavy wood, but tremendously heavy. So they said to my father, he should carry all the furniture into one, the largest room, into the living room. So my father says, I'll gladly do it, but I cannot do it. I cannot do it myself. So he got a punch, and they started to beat him. He said, you cursed Jew, you have to do it. So my father said, you can do whatever you want. I cannot. It's impossible. I can, but this is impossible. So my father said, let somebody help me. I'll do it, but let somebody help me. So I said, what, we should help? So my father said, I'll go down, I'll get somebody, and I'll bring up someone who should help me. From the street, I'll pay him. So the SS says, go down, but you have to pay. My father says, good, I'll pay. So he went with the intention of getting a goy, you know, somebody should help. And as he gets out from the house, with the intention of finding somebody should go up with him and help him put together all the furniture, the same thought comes to him, what I said before to my mother. My wife is out. My children are out. Now I should go back. And he decides, but where to find? Where can we find us? So we come back. And she thought to himself, by the family's out, they which helped so far, they which will help weiter. They which will continue helping Hashem. And as he walked only this half a block to the corner, he bumped into us. But what can we do now? Without any money, you cannot do anything. Baruch Hashem, we were very, very well up, very rich in Czechoslovakia. Although since 1941, when Hitler gave this part of Czechoslovakia to Hungary, they didn't permit any Jews to keep any stores, so my father didn't. The store had to close down, the textile store, and he couldn't work. But still, we had a lot of money from before, and everything was hidden. But when he escaped, he couldn't take any money. And we didn't have any money. Without money, you can't do anything. What was the plan? You see, Slovakia, this part became already Hungary now. Slovakia, they took all the Jews from Slovakia for 1942. By 1944, Slovakia was Jew clean. There was no more Jews. So now, whom did they permit to stay in Czechoslovakia? Only the VIPs, the very important people, meaning doctors, but also very famous doctors, get injuries which the country needed. But everybody else, these hundreds of thousands of Slovakian Jews, were all deported in 1942, and they were all perished in Auschwitz. So now, it was our goal, because since our uncles were also the VIP people, they were permitted to stay there, we should smuggle ourselves through the border from Hungary to Czechoslovakia. But what can you do without any money? Without money, who is going to endanger his life to take you across the border, to smuggle you, the family, Jewish family, through the borders? So we need money. So again, as I told you before, the Germans, however anti-Semitic, and they wanted to make the final solution, kill out all the Jews, but everything in a methodical way. So it wasn't that dangerous. A German could find a Jew. It wasn't his turn to come to be taken. The Jew was still free. So my father described to our niece, to her niece, to his niece, to our cousin, where exactly in the house was the money stashed away. She'd go to this apartment and take out a bunch, and everything was in dollars. Because during the war, the only money which was accepted all over the world, all over the country, by the Germans, by everybody, as a matter of fact, the Germans only wanted dollars, American dollars. So at least one pile, a bunch of American dollars she should take out. And we didn't endanger her life, because I said, since she didn't live in this inner city, they wouldn't take her. She came to our house, and she climbed up near this, the ceiling. A little door which wasn't so visible because covered up with the wallpaper, and she pushed away the door, and she had her hand already in a whole pile of dollar bills. It wasn't dollar bills, everything in $100, but there was a pile of dollars. One of the women who were put up with us, she was living with us by 3 or 4 weeks, and my mother was so kind to her, so generous, so good to her, so she was so loyal to us. She started to shout, "A ganef!" In Yiddish, started to shout, "A ganef, a thieves, steals for the mangles." So the SS came in from the other room, came to this room, and of course she had to jump off for the chair. She did not see what's there, and said, "Who are you? What are you?" She says, "I'm the niece and we are the mangles, and I came to visit my uncle and aunt." Says the mangles. Says yes. Says the mangles escaped, because this was a few hours later. The mangles escaped. You tell them, from the SS nobody escapes. We'll find them. If we don't come back within an hour, we'll find them, we'll shoot them on the place, on the spot. She came back, and can you imagine, with such good tidings, from the SS nobody escapes. And we'll catch them. But if we don't come back within an hour, so it'll be all shot. But my father says, under no circumstances. Back to the SS means back to Auschwitz, go to Auschwitz. So what's the difference? We'll be shot here, or we'll meet our deaths over there, and in no circumstances we are going back. Now we have to find a way how to smuggle ourselves through the border. Here we couldn't stay anymore. Besides, they're taking all the Jews to Auschwitz. But they are going to catch us. So we have to go across the border. So we had to, it will take us too much time not to tell you in detail, much ingenious ways, until we got smuggled through for us from our uncles in Slovakia, these VIP people who were permitted to stay there, send us money, and then we got a person to take us the next Sunday, take us across the border into Slovakia. Because the city where we come from is like maybe 15 kilometers from the border. And afterwards is already Slovakia. The border is all forests and mountains, so we had to smuggle ourselves through these mountains and the forests, and we entered into Slovakia, and then there was no danger because the Jews were not looked after, they didn't search for Jews anymore because all the Jews were taken already. How can you smuggle yourself through the border? So this person, this was his parnosse, this was his job. Was a watchman for many peasants who have the fields at the border, and people, thieves shouldn't steal away their crops, their fruits, so he was the watchman. So he had a special permission to go around all these fields and this forest, because he's an official watchman. And he became the person who smuggled through many in. But how can you go through the border? Until you come to the border, you go through many police check you up, you have your identification, checkpoints and so on. So what did he do? Next Sunday, he brought us clothes like Hungarian peasants. You know how Hungarian, a peasant woman, how she is dressed? I mean, if you see pictures, one skirt, another skirt, another skirt, and another skirt, 55 different skirts, you know, it goes like this, and the jackets and the shirts and the blouses, and same thing also the farmers and the peasants with the boots and their hats. See, Brad, for all of us, we should look like farmers, peasants, and we're just going in these villages as to our homes. But in the meantime, when they heard that the Mangals are going to cross next Sunday, so the neighbors, who are children, grown-up children, and they knew what their fate, they're going to be taken to Auschwitz, they came crying to us, we should take them also along. She said a family of four people, a group of four people, my father promised that this person and this person and this child and this child, the time when he came, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, when he came to take us, sees a whole caravan of 15 people. He says, he's afraid. How can he do such a thing? My father promised him, he'd give him triple. He will take everybody along. He says, but it's dangerous. He says, the only way I can do it, he can divide into groups, because one group, 50 people, 50 don't go, 50 people, peasants don't work together. So he's going to divide into groups. So this, my father agreed. Everybody get their clothes. My mother, mom, I couldn't recognize my mother, you know, with all this fancy Sunday, the peasant garments and so on. I had also little boots. Anyways, divided into three groups. My father was supposed to be, I was the first group with another three or four people. Then we were with this leader, this watchman. He was the middle group. And behind us was another group. And we were just separated like 100, 200 meters apart. And we were supposed to go towards this mountain. And they will meet. And then we cross over. An hour or two later, we cross over the border. And so this leader, the watchman, says to my father, you go ahead, 200 meters, and describes him exactly how, for example, from here you have to go to Williamsburg. So he just tells him the way how to go. And it wasn't such a complicated way. We come to the, we arrive, and in the middle, many times they said stopped us, and they did not suspect that we are Yidden, but what did they ask us? And you can't imagine how our hearts are started to beat. They didn't recognize, this is a miracle. So as we hear it through this path, many Jews are escaping. Do you know how do they escape? Can you imagine, they ask us how the Jews escape from here. And we are ourselves. But anyways, we went through this. We come to this meadow, just in front of this mountain, where we were supposed to meet. And my father and his group is not there. And he should have been there at least 10, 15 minutes earlier, because he was a few hundred meters ahead of us. We wait and wait and wait, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 2 o'clock, we were supposed to already cross the border. It's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, our father doesn't come. So this watchman said, and continuously the SS and the Gestapo were just marching through, and he says, it becomes suspicious, how long can you stay here? What do you do? What do farmers just sit on grass for hours and hours? My mother says, I will not budge, I will not move until father is here. So this watchman says, Mrs. Mengele, I promise you, let's cross the border, and tomorrow I'll go back and I'll bring your husband and the group. And again my mother says, under no circumstances, if father is not here, I'm not crossing the border. So this person says, but you're endangering the life of all these people, they'll be caught. Says my mother only answers, if my husband is not here, I'm not going. So this leader, he says, so where should I go look for your husband? Says, only stands to reason. If he lost his way, what happened? He went back to the place where he came from. So go to the place where we came from for our cousins or from his niece and nephew, and go find him. An hour or two later, he comes back with my father and the whole group. What happened to my father? As he saw this Gestapo coming, and he had like a Yiddish face, you know, a Yiddish face, you know, the nose was a little bit like Jewish. So he didn't want to just bump into them. They should ask him why. So it meant a different road and another different road until he lost his way and he couldn't find the place. So he had to go back. When did we set out? We set out instead of 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we set out at like 8 o'clock in the evening. And then I have to go through this pitch dark forest, kilometers upon kilometers. The forest was so dense with trees that you couldn't just, a whole group of people should walk. only per one. I remember I had to hold the jacket of my father. My mother was holding my jacket. The sister was holding the skirt of my mother, like the whole caravan, the whole line. And since they knew the Jews are escaping through this forest, the SS were mamish filled throughout the border to catch Eden. Many times we heard a little whisper. We heard a sound of the SS. We had to lay down immediately. And mamish, we heard the conversation that we didn't fall into their hands because the whole border was filling fast with the SS to catch the Eden who are smuggling themselves through the border. And we heard the conversation. There was one child. So it was my mother or my sister, I don't remember who it was, had to fill continuously chocolates in the mouth of the child. Shouldn't the baby shouldn't cry. Just imagine middle when they would hear us. But anyways, we came to the border, a few kilometers, the border between Hungary and Slovakia. And he only knew the side of Hungary. The other side in Slovakia he did not know anymore because he was only the watchman of the fields here. He had to take the other people. That's how it was organized. And it was a whole organization that he brings the Jews to the border. Another goyim will take us from the border back into Slovakia. These people didn't come. Obviously didn't come because we were supposed to leave 2 o'clock. We there at 6 o'clock. We left around 8 o'clock. And we arrived around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. It was pitch dark. We can hear the voices of the SS, how they are walking, how they are talking. Any second they can catch us. waiting, those people should take us, and they don't come to pick us up. His watchman says, now here I have to leave you, I can't endanger my life any further, you have to pay me, and now here do whatever you want, go yourself into Slovakia. So my father says, how can we go to Slovakia, how do we know our ways, where do we go in our forest, how do we... He says, I also don't know. So my father says, I give you again triple, take us into Slovakia, but at least you are familiar with forest, you know at least where to, what to go. You don't know the way in Slovakia, but at least you are a man of the forest, you know what to do. So since my father promised him triple, and this goes in the tens of thousands of dollars, and he marched into Slovakia, and we are walking like maybe a half an hour, and suddenly we see from a distance, from a far distance, little people, you know, in the black, these little images of people. So when he noticed this, he says, immediately lay down to the ground, because maybe this is the SS, and they'll see us. So immediately lay down to the ground, and they shouldn't see us. But what did we notice? When we lay down to the ground, those people also lay down to the ground. So we realized it must be Achenu, somebody for us, to help us. So we crawled on the ground, and they also did the same thing, until it was around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, but still pitch dark. And who are those? The two ladies who were taking in the Jews from Slovakia, from Hungary, they came to the border, take them into Slovakia. And when we met, we all again lay down on the ground, the SS should notice us. But the goyim, remember, what did General Schwarzkopf say after the war in Iraq? It was a miracle. They expected thousands upon thousands of bodies of United States soldiers will come out back dead. And altogether, just a handful of American soldiers were killed. So General Schwarzkopf said, it's a miracle. These two peasant ladies says, you can't imagine the miracle which Hashem did for you. Says, what was the miracle? Says, you know, you were supposed to be here 2 o'clock. So we were here 2 o'clock, because that's how it was prearranged. They would come and they'll take us back, take us into Slovakia. 2 o'clock, the SS caught them. They were caught. These two Gentile, Goyish ladies, who were also the smugglers of Jews into Slovakia, they were caught. She says, what are you doing at the border every day? She said, you must be those people who helped the Jews to smuggle themselves into Slovakia. And they took them to the Stab, the headquarters of the SS, and they kept on bidding they should divulge how it is organized, this bricha, you know, this escape, how it is organized, and kept them till 6 o'clock. From 2 o'clock, keep on bidding them they should reveal how this all this thing is arranged. Now he says, if you would have been here 2 o'clock, in other words, if Father would have got his way lost. Would have been there 2 o'clock. Would the SS catch us? What the SS? For the SS, nobody can escape. Would have been in the hands of the SS. 2 o'clock, these two women were caught. And we would have been caught. And we would be shot on the spot.